from WDET in Detroit. This is Created Equal. Today, we're going to deal with the question of what prosperity means. And we've got a great guest to help explain it to us. Kim Trent is the Deputy Director for Prosperity for the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. Governor Gretchen Whitmer has said many times that she wants to take a different approach to alleviating poverty in our state and creating opportunity for those who are in poverty to move to something else. We're going to ask Kim what prosperity actually looks like. What does it mean in Michigan, and how are they trying to move families to it? That's all next on Created Equal, right after the news from NPR and WDET.
This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Welcome to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm here with the show's producer, Carrie Jr. II.
Hello, Stephen.
Hey. So, Carrie, I spent a lot of time sitting around thinking about things and wondering how they work or what they mean. And today's episode is a great example of exactly that. Did you know, for instance, before we did this, that there is a deputy director of prosperity here in the state of Michigan?
Of prosperity? No, I've never heard of that title. It sounds bold, but also I find it interesting that you sit around thinking about the deputy director of prosperity.
I happen to know the person who has that job, so that helped, right? It helped introduce me to the topic.
But,
when I think about the work that would attend that kind of title, I have a lot of questions. How do we define prosperity? And what does it mean to achieve prosperity? And I don't mean that in a cynical way, as if I somehow doubt that they can do it. I just really want to know how they define those things and how they think about them and how that differs, perhaps, I guess, from the way that government has tried to eliminate poverty in the past.
Yeah, that's definitely a vague term for something that I imagine has some tangible, practical programs associated with it. Do you know a little bit about like what approach they're taking?
Well, it's different. They are more focused on the indicators that that people who live in poverty are dealing with. Access to food, for instance, access to shelter, access to opportunity to get out of poverty, and they're more directly designing programs to deal with those things, right? There are these things called ALICE indicators, which are the way that we define poverty in this country, and they're really tracking on how those indicators shape people's lives and how government can directly move the needle on those things. They're also involving nonprofits more than past administrations have in designing programs to deal with poverty.
I mean, we hear a lot about nonprofit work and the funds that they get, and I always have questions about whether or not those programs are actually achieving the goals that they're set out to achieve. And if they're held accountable, if they aren't achieving those goals, all that kind of stuff. So like, who do you have in mind to talk about it? Who's your friend?
Kim Trent, who is the Deputy Director of Prosperity for the Department of Labor and Economic Growth here in Michigan. Really smart person, really thoughtful. And we're going to hear from her how they're framing this and then how they're doing the work. Kim Trent, welcome to Created Equal.
Oh, it's always such a wonderful time here at WDET. Thank you so much.
Yes, it's great to have you here.
Inviting me once again.
Yeah. So I have to just say up front that this conversation comes out of just something I've been sitting around thinking about.
That's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, it can be, right? You and I have known each other a long time, and you've done a number of different things and had lots of really, really important jobs where you've had a lot of impact on our community. But your current job and the title that you have is something that I've been thinking a lot about. Mm. And I just want to know more about what it is, what you guys are doing, and how different this is from the way that that state government has approached these problems before. So let's start with what your actual title is. It is Deputy Director for Prosperity for the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. Now that is, I mean, it's maybe the heady title I can think of.
Right.
But let's talk about that.
Sure.
Director of Prosperity. What does that mean in state government?
Well, can I tell you what it means for me personally?
Yeah.
Because I am a native Michigander. My father's grandparents came to Michigan in 1913, his paternal grandparents. And my great-grandfather worked at Ford Motor Company and was ended up being a skilled tradesman. So he actually had a pretty successful middle-class life. They lived
Very common story, right?
All the hallmarks of the Great Migration. Yes. You know, they lived in Black Bottom, then they moved to the Old West Side, and, you know, they had four children. They, the children, you know, had their own families, and they also worked at, a lot of them worked at the plant, too. And it was, Michigan was a magnet for prosperity. I mean, I think that people forget that in the 20th century, Michigan was a top-tier state when it came to you know, wages, when it came to generational wealth for some people. You know, home ownership, a city like Detroit, everybody I knew, when I was a child, every adult I knew owned a house. And it's not like I knew like particularly wealthy people.
Right.
You know,
right.
It just was a, it just
you, was. If you lived in a middle or even working class neighborhood,
right,
everybody up and down the block owned their home.
Pretty much.
And when we were kids in the 70s and 80s, that meant they were African Americans. I mean, the city was turning into the majority Black city we know now.
Right.
And that was built on an ownership model.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, so we know that we have been overly reliant on one industry, you know, throughout the 20th century. We know that we, you know, so that we needed to diversify the economy, you know, the workforce and the jobs that we brought in. And we are not as educated as we should be. Frankly, when you look at the top 15 states in the country as it relates to, you know, income and measures like that, they are the states that have higher college graduation rates. That's just facts. And so the way that I approach this job, there are people in our state who, you know, meet the federal guidelines of what poverty is. The measure we use is the ALICE rate, Asset Limited Income Constrained and Employed. That's the number, the metric that was created by United Way. We think that's a much more accurate description of what it means to be struggling in our state. And there are people who live in that kind of strata. What we really are focusing on, the short term of for the people who are living in poverty, helping them live in poverty with dignity, helping them to have housing, opportunities for job, opportunities for training to get better jobs, opportunities, access to food. You know, we have a serious problem with food insecurity in our state. So all of those hallmarks of what makes a prosperous state. So we want that. But then the long game, get people out of poverty, get people out of the ALICE rate, let them have enough money to pay their bills and comfortably be able to send their children to college or to whatever trade. You know, we, the governor has the 60 by 30 initiative, which up until December was actually part of my portfolio. And that initiative to get 60% of working adults in Michigan a post-secondary credential or degree or, you know, high-value apprenticeship. We what is the difference in the work that we're doing now is that it's very intentional, that we have, you know, benchmarks that we're looking at, that we have dashboards, that we're really paying attention and working collaboratively. I think, you know, the Michigan Poverty Task Force, which I lead, has 14 State Department directors at the table because we realize we can't just do this thing in a vacuum. It can't just be DHHS and LEO, Labor Economic Opportunity, which is the department I work for. We can't just be the only departments in the state that think about poverty. It has to be everybody.
It's got to be everybody. So, yeah. So let's go back to that word, prosperity. Mm. What does that mean?
Prosperity for me means having enough. Period.
Like, and there are lots of people who still don't. Right?
There are a lot of people who don't. And you know, and I don't mean just for the bare necessities, because a lot of people don't have enough for that. I mean, a lot of people who go to work every day in the state, a lot of people who work two jobs every day in the state don't have enough. So how do we make sure that people's basic needs are met, but that they also have access to future success? Their children have access to, you know, again, all of those basic needs being met comfortably, but also above that.
Yeah.
You know, we want people to have, I mean, I look at the opportunities that I had because my parents were educated and because it was just a given that I would go to college, you know, to travel, to, you know, all of those things are the extras, but they're things that make you a balanced person, that, you know, build community. Sometimes you have more of an appreciation of where you live when you get to go other places. So there are so many elements of life that make for a prosperous life.
Yeah.
Money is a big part of it. And let's have a conversation about money being a big part of it, because for so long, the national conversation, when we talk about things like cash benefits, there has been this mythology that has been created to vilify poor people.
Sure.
You know, to look at their circumstances and say they deserve it. Right. If you give them cash, they're going to go buy a Cadillac or whatever other racist trope that people have created. So, you know, when we had the child tax credit during COVID, there's ample evidence that all of the results were good.
Poverty went way down.
People invested. People's credit scores went up. People started launching businesses. I mean, there were all good outcomes. And so the idea that you can trust people with, and especially with the way that the economy is evolving with AI and all these things. Listen, we're going to have some hard conversations about things like, well, I mean, there's nothing on the table for this right now, but how do you ensure that everyone is going to be okay in a world where computers can do a lot, if not most of the jobs?
What work are people even going to be able to have?
Exactly. So what do we do? Are we going to just have a country where we just allow people to lapse into abject poverty? You know, that can't be the solution.
So let's talk about what that looks like in practical terms, in terms of the kinds of things you guys are trying. Mm-hmm. And as I said up front, I know that the administration, Governor Whitmer's administration, is really focused on innovation and trying to do this differently, trying to reach that prosperity you're talking about through different means. And one of them is this new program to fund, move money to nonprofits that are trying to do that. Mm-hmm. Talk about the structure that you're setting up here and the goal of doing it.
So we actually had three grant programs in my portfolio that we managed for nonprofits. We had one that we worked with the Michigan Nonprofit Association on, relief grants, which were designed to, I mean, particularly during the COVID, you know, kind of the heart of COVID 2021, there are organizations that really struggled and had more demand because of COVID. So what we had, when we had an opportunity, when we got, you know, federal dollars in, we really wanted to go out to our partners in the nonprofit sector and say, we know you've had a tough time. Let's help you. You know, we had programs to help individuals. We had programs to help businesses. Nonprofits deserve that support too. So there was this relief grant program that it was a smaller program, $5,000 to $25,000. We had 1,400 small nonprofits that were helped through that program. Mm-hmm. We also had another program that really was about helping innovative nonprofits test drive some of their ideas. You know, we call that the My Impact grant program. Yeah. And that one is the one that really gets my motor running because, you know, we've always partnered with nonprofits to have them kind of try out some of the more innovative ideas. This was an opportunity for us to do it all across the state, to really look at innovative things. So, for example, when I talk about food security, we had a nonprofit in Lansing that was, you know, working with things like Uber Eats and, you know, those kind of programs to get fresh food to, you know, people who aren't able to go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just really figuring out how we can leverage technology, leverage existing businesses to better deliver services to Michiganders. So, you know, those kind of ideas, you know, I'm a big fan of the RX Kids program in Flint, which is a, you know, cash benefits program to help mothers who are, you know, pregnant so that they're, there's so much evidence, there's so much research that shows that both for mothers and babies, those first, you know, 12 months are just absolutely critical.
Yeah.
And so how do we make sure that mothers are getting to their prenatal appointments, that they're taking their babies after they're born to their appointments, that they have transportation? You know, when I look at just the landscape of what I do, you know, there are a lot of different problems that need solving and need, you know, collaborative approach. But transportation and housing are the two problems by far that I talk about or that I hear about when I'm out talking to folks.
So this new funding, let's talk about this, My Impact funding, which is, again, a different approach to, to this thing. Talk about the goals here. I mean, RX Kids is a really great example. And we talked with Mona Hanna, Atisha, and Luke Schaefer, who designed that program. I mean, it's really mind-blowing when you think about what they're trying to do. But you're trying to find lots of things that do that. Is that right?
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, we want to, when people have ideas that we think could have impact, it's an opportunity for us to test drive it with organizations that have credibility in the communities they're serving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as much as we like to think government is the solution, and it often is, not everybody is in love with government.
Everyone doesn't like the government. Right?
Right. So, you know, nonprofits, though, sometimes people have a much more trusting relationship with them. So how do we get these, leverage that, so that trust that exists between people and nonprofits to better serve Michiganders using state dollars sometimes? So we thought that that was a good way. And so with the My Impact grant, we had 10 grantees from across the state. It was a small pie, only $15 million. But, you know, we are starting to, it's still new. I mean, we're just kind of getting the grants out on the street. But just a lot of excitement about some of the ideas that we have rolling with that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Kim Trent, Deputy Director for Prosperity for the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. We're going to hear more about what they're doing with this My Impact Fund, giving money to nonprofits to help solve poverty in our state. Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Created Equal from 101.9 WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and thanks for joining us. Our guest today is Kim Trent. She's Deputy Director for Prosperity for the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. So before the break, we were talking about this My Impact Fund that you guys have started that is trying to find nonprofits that are interested in this and doing things differently.
Right.
So let's define that. What's the criteria for the nonprofits that are applying?
Well, that grant program is closed.
That
so
one's
we
done.
Have 10, yeah, we have 10 grantees already. But, you know, the thinking with that one is, are you a nonprofit that serves, you know, Alice Rate and below Michiganders?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first criteria. You know, we wanted to definitely have an impact in those communities. And what is your innovative approach to serving that population? What is it that you're bringing to the table? And so we had a lot of interest in that. We had applications for about $200 million in requests. So we had 142 applications
wow.
for 10 grants. So, you know, lots of interest. That grant program, we were probably looking at a little bit bigger nonprofits. The other grant program was for more of the mom and pop shops that very rarely get opportunities to get any kind of support from the state.
Right.
This one was for more established because, you know, you have to have the administrative, you know, wherewithal to handle kind of a large scale project. But, you know, when I talked about the project in Lansing, for example, that was one of the one of our impact grants. We're working with Alternatives for Girls here in Detroit. You know, if you know anything about that organization, they are constantly changing the conversation about how to serve, you know, at-risk girls in our state, in our city. So those are the kinds of projects that we got with the impact grant.
Yeah.
You know, and then we also saw with other FRF dollars that, you know, those federal dollars that came in, not necessarily even just with the state, but even on the county level, you start to see some cash benefits programs that have emerged. Washtenaw County, for example, and then I think the city of Ann Arbor has its own. So I think that there's a lot of innovation that's happening right now, and we really want to be in that space.
Yeah. So how are you measuring the success of what these nonprofits are doing?
Right.
Like you said, there's 10 of them. They've been at it for about a year. It's a little early to be asking for...
No, it's only been a couple months.
It's a couple months.
It's brand new.
Yeah.
It's a brand new program. We let the winners were, the grantees were informed in December. So we're still...
So you know, we're still
But
really
even since
early.
Then, we've already served 619 ALICE families in the state. So, you know, obviously the number of people who are served is one measure. But the other measure is how many of those members of the ALICE population who are being served in the end are no longer in the ALICE population.
Right,
that's the goal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when we look at metrics, that's what we're looking at. How do we move people so that they're on a path to not be in that population anymore? But then also, you know, again, another goal is the people who are in that population. Part of the way that you are going to move out of it, obviously, we need more workforce participation. So ideas like the TriShare program, which is another LEO program where... or was actually that has now moved over to the governor's new Miley. That was also once in my portfolio, but that it's a good place for it to be. But you know, a program where employers who are looking for a way to get people back in the workforce, particularly women who were reluctant to rejoin the workforce because childcare is so expensive and it's not as accessible as it should be.
Yeah.
So women were a little slower to come back. An employer could sign up for TriShare, which meant that they would pay for a third of childcare costs. The parent would pay for a third, and the state of Michigan kicks in that last third. So really innovative program, first of its kind here in Michigan. Now we see several other states who are looking at it, some of whom have already adopted it. Just trying to be creative about removing barriers to work, removing barriers to better work.
Yeah.
Because it's not just work. I mean, that's one of the things that I think if I look at, you know, where the Whitmer administration has moved the needle a little bit, is that we are very intentional about saying not just work, but better paying work, more sustainable work.
Right.
You know, what are the jobs of the future? What are the jobs that will, you know, maybe swerve around AI? You know, what are the jobs that will, you know, not only still be here, but we'll still be paying a decent salary. You know, my great grandparents came here, not just because my grandfather wanted to get a job. He wanted to get a job that could sustain his family comfortably.
Sure. Yeah.
So we want to be that kind of state again. And so, you know, what we're doing when we talk about getting more people those credentials, we're being really intentional, for example, with registered apprenticeships. You know, we know that people see their wages go up when they have participated in a registered apprenticeship program. We know that women are underrepresented in a lot of the more lucrative registered apprenticeships. So we're trying to be very intentional. Michigan Women's Commission is working with nonprofits yet again, or has worked with nonprofits to be the sounding board to make sure that they know, you know, to go to the people they're serving to say, hey, do you know about this opportunity for you to get a job, perhaps in the construction industry?
Right.
You know, things that a lot of women may have never thought about until they see what the pay scale looks like and they think, oh, well, I could do that,
yeah.
You know? So, and we're seeing, particularly among Black women, we actually have had some pretty good results on that.
Yeah. So, one of the things that always gets asked, I think, about government involvement in this kind of activity is whether it's about giving people what they need in the short term, meaning emergency needs, really,
right,
like
sure.
we were talking
basic
about food
needs.
Earlier or housing, mm-hmm. or is it or should it be more about moving people to a better place? I mean, talk
it
about how you balance that.
It has to be both.
But how do you balance that?
Well, let
that?
Me tell you what. So how we balance it. So, for example, when we talk about 60 by 30 and the Reconnect Scholarship, what we learned very early in our experience.
And explain to our listeners 60 by 30.
Oh, 60 by 30, again, is the governor's initiative to get 60% of working adults in the state a post-secondary credential, college degree, or, you know, highly... Or a registered apprenticeship or
like a skill,
you know,
certificate,
skill yeah. certificate, those kind of credentials, a high value credential.
60%
so kind of something that's portable too, not just okay. something that's just for, you know, you're in that particular job, you
right.
know, something
that you can take with you.
You.
Yeah.
Something you can take with you. So when we started our effort with that, and you know, as you know, Stephen, I was once a university board member. And when I, for example, joined the board at Wayne State, our overall graduation rates were
really
abysmal.
Yeah.
And for people of color, they were disgusting. Like they were really bad. And what we learned is it's not money, you know, affordability was a huge issue when people were returning to school. But there are a lot of other factors. You know, when I talk about transportation, if you don't have somewhere to live, that's going to be a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Your priority is not going to be, you know, English 101.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have adequate food, you know, I feel really crazy now when I think about it because it's the work that I do, but I had no idea when I joined a university board, the number of college kids who are homeless.
Who are homeless.
Homeless, yeah. who are couch surfing, who are sleeping in their cars. You know, that is real life. You know, when you're an adult, people act like you get some kind of guidebook when you become an adult and you know how to do it mm-hmm. all. I mean, there are a lot of people who are out here on their own.
Yeah.
And so how do we streamline the process so people can get the help that they need in the short term so they can get those long-term goals accomplished, so they can get that college degree, so they can get that certificate? And so when I say it's both, when we are doing the work that we're doing, when we talk to like the food banks in Michigan, or when we talk to people who are providing services, we're also saying, listen, talk to your people about opportunities that we have for them to get better work,
yeah.
you know, so that they can have a higher income. So they're not living in the Alice population where you're robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I mean, it sounds easy, but it's extremely, extremely difficult. There are mental health challenges that all of us have coming out of COVID, you know, no matter what your
That's
economic
right.
status is. But when you're living in trauma, that is, and poverty is trauma.
It's disruptive, right.
Poverty is a trauma.
Yeah.
And so how do you also grapple with that? That's a need that needs to be met. You know, so one of the things I like about the governor's approach, we are looking at all of those different efforts. I mean, the governor's trying to get more mental health professionals in the pipeline, particularly people of color, you know, making sure that they are culturally competent. So those are the, you know, we have to look at both of those things. It has to be the wraparound services while we're moving people to a path so they can have long-term success.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to talk about the kind of flip side of this approach and argument that always comes up. And I know you're not a politician right now. You're an appointee.
Or ever. Right,
or ever again. You're never going to do it again.
No, sir.
You know, so many people who have run for public office are now saying to me, I would never do that again. Whether they won or lost,
right.
It's just the brutality, I think.
I absolutely loved my role on the Wayne State Board, except for the last year.
Yeah.
But it was
but
it was definitely one of the most important things I've ever done in my life. So I want smart, competent,
yeah.
loving, caring people to run for office. We need that. It just doesn't need to be.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Okay.
But there is a political context
Correct.
To the work that you're doing mm-hmm. and the approach that you guys are taking, right?
Correct.
Republicans in Lansing would say this money could maybe be better spent in tax breaks, for instance. To businesses, right, or to wealthier people, because they would go and create jobs, and that would be the opportunity for the folks who
right.
Fall below that Alice
sure.
line. They would say that the things that you're doing are too expensive for the return that we get from them, right? That it is, it's cyclical, that, yeah, this will help some people in the short term, but they'll probably fall back into poverty, at some point. I know that what you're doing here is supposed to be different, right? You're taking a different tack.
Sure.
Does it better answer those questions or those criticisms from the other side?
Well, let me tell you what I've seen that has been surprising to me, frankly. There is broad bipartisan support for a lot of these
ideas. For a lot of this, right?
There are.
That's true.
Paul Ryan is one of the biggest advocates for things like basic income and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So because, you know why? People have figured out there's more to helping an economy than cutting taxes. Nobody enjoys writing that check to the IRS in April. However, we also recognize that, government is here to serve and to help us have the communities that we want to have. So I truly believe there's, for example, the Earned Income Tax Credit.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely support on both sides of the aisle for that.
It was a Republican idea.
It was a Republican idea. I mean, and things, so now I think a lot of times the noise we hear, because we hear from a very tiny sliver of one party who has the microphone, and sometimes, but when you look at who's really making policy happen, there's broad consensus on a lot of this stuff. I think, even things that were verbal, like there was no way you were going to talk about, a cash benefit or changing TANF. Our TANF system in Michigan is profoundly broken.
Yes, as it is in most states, right?
But Michigan is an outlier even for example, if you, we have a policy.
And TANF, we should explain that.
It's
temporary assistance to needy families.
Needy families, yeah.
This was the program that was abused in Mississippi,
by
Brett Favre, and that's the most easy reference, I think, for people to understand what that is, how much of a mess it is.
That was a mess. Yeah. That was certainly a mess. And I can say we don't have any Brett Favres around here in Michigan. But what we also don't have is adequate support for the families that really need that. They're called FIP payments in Michigan. 6%. Of the dollars, we get $700 million from the federal government for TANF. 6% of that is going to people.
Yeah.
6%.
Yeah. I mean, that's just not.
I mean, come on. And so.
And why is that? I mean, explain why that happens.
Because people make political decisions. Yeah. I mean, there was a national, as you know, effort to have so-called welfare reform in the 90s. And Michigan kind of said, hold my beer. Mm-hmm. Every idea that came out of the federal, we had federal, for example, there's a 60-month time limit on the number of months that someone can receive TANF assistance for life, a lifetime benefit of 60 months. Michigan said, actually, we're going to say 48 months here. So one of the examples I always use is, if you are receiving those benefits, you are required to have meetings with your caseworker, a certain number of meetings. If you miss 3 meetings, you will be cut off from TANF assistance for life.
Forever.
For life.
Yeah.
Now, just think of all of the reasons that a low-income person might miss an appointment. Lack of transportation, lack of childcare, work schedules that they have no control over.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, we really have a system that's designed to lock people out. And so, we first have to look at the resources we already have on the table. How do we shift some of those resources? I'm very excited that in the governor's 2025 budget proposal, she imagines that we lengthen the amount of time that a person can get TANF from 48 to the federal, limit of 60 months.
Yeah.
She is talking about raising the payment standard for people who receive TANF for the first time since 1990.
Mm.
Just think about your budget in 1990.
Right.
I know you were still in college.
Right.
live
on that now.
Exactly. But we want people who are the neediest people in our state
to
live off
work.
Of 1990 payment standards. I mean, come on. So both of those things are in the governor's budget proposal. I have a report that's coming out next month from the University of Kansas where they come in and do a deep dive and look at Michigan and do comparisons. What are other Great Lakes states doing? What are other states across the country? What are some innovative ways that people are using TANF dollars?
Yeah.
Because some of the ways that we're using here, are really not what TANF is intended for.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. guest today is Kim Trent. She's the Deputy Director for Prosperity for the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. And she's here really just answering my questions. Kim, I want to talk about some of the other things you guys are doing. We were talking about the My Impact Fund and the 10 nonprofits that you have now sent out with a mission to innovate the way that they solve poverty. What else are you guys looking at, and what are we kind of expecting in the, this will be the last 2 years, I guess, that we still have of the governor's term. Mm-hmm. Actually 3 years, right?
3 years.
You know, the difference here, I think, is again worth noting. This is stuff that this is an approach we haven't done before,
right,
in Michigan. Well, and we've been doing the opposite for a long time.
I think that, there was not a political appetite to even say the word poverty.
Yeah.
I mean, it just was not on the table. There's a lot of talk about middle class. And of course, we want to expand and grow the middle class. Mm-hmm. But, and we are very focused on the issues that affect the middle class, but it just was not in vogue to talk about people who are living in poverty or people who are struggling in our state. And what we saw between, 2002 and 2019 is a huge spike in that ALICE population. The ALICE population is, again, people who work every day, working people who just are not, don't have enough to pay for the basics. And when we're talking about the basics, we're talking about clothing, food, mm-hmm, shelter, communication. There was a time when, a phone might have been seen as somewhat of a luxury. We know today technology, having access to the internet and technology is, when we talk about moving up in the world, how are you going to move out up if you can't? A lot of jobs you're getting online. A lot of medicine, when you're going to the doctor, you're doing that. I mean, it is a necessity now in a way that it maybe wasn't 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So how are we making sure that everyone has access to those things? One of the divisions that I have in my portfolio is the Michigan High Speed Internet Office. And so with all of these things we're doing, we're looking at equity as not just like a buzzword that everybody tacked on in 2020, but really—
What does that mean and look like, right?
Managers in my department talk to folks about things like the Barwood Wall.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got to talk about history because history informs the present. And this whole movement toward pretending, almost like putting our fingers in our ears and saying, la, 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 we're going to act like that stuff didn't happen. You have to explain to people how we got here. And so, because in addition to everything else I do, I'm also the equity and inclusion officer for Michigan. So, which I think is, at first I said, oh, another thing on my plate. I mean, I think equity and inclusion work is vital, but I'm so grateful to have been given that opportunity because everything I do, when you talk about prosperity, it has to have an equity component to it, particularly in a state like Michigan.
So you referenced the wall here in Detroit, which we should let our listeners who don't know that there was a wall built in the, I'm not going to get the decade right here. I want to say the 30s or 40s, right?
I believe the 40s.
In a neighborhood.
Call Ken Coleman, you'll know.
That's right. Your husband would know, a great historian.
Right.
It was built to divide black Detroiters from white Detroiters, to make sure that black Detroiters could not live in a white neighborhood.
Right. But you know what? I think a lot of times when that conversation happens, people just think, we have this, water fountain view of it, white people just didn't want to be around black people. Yeah. This is stuff the federal government.
Yes. Yes.
Codified.
Yeah, said that you had to do.
You had to do in order for white people to be able to develop. Absolutely. They could not be.
You could not.
The federal government mandated segregation in the North.
Yes.
People think that this was just a Southern thing. This is Detroit, Michigan.
Federal law, right.
It was federal law. So when you ignore that history and, this and have this myth of rugged individualism, when clearly the federal government played favorites and decided some people were going to have opportunities and others were not.
So when you're talking to people in your office about that, what are you trying to get them to understand?
I need them to understand, first of all, people with really good intentions, everybody comes to the world from where they were born.
We all swim where they in were the water educated. We were born in.
Right. And so you have a lot of this, it's just information they just need to know when they're doing their work. They need to know how we got here. Mm-hmm. Because it is easy in a culture that really values quote unquote individualism to not understand that we have always been kind of schizophrenic in our approach to how American government works. It's always been this, anybody can come here and rugged individualism, you can make it. But then also, but here's like a bag of money for you. You know, when we tell people that after the Civil War, white slave owners were compensated for their loss of property.
Mm-hmm.
And this black slave never got their 40 acres.
Now we're having an argument about whether African Americans should get reparations. Right.
Well, I mean, even the word is like, don't even say that word out loud. But I mean, you know, it's not state. It's not my job to promote reparations, but it is my job to give people context.
Right.
So that they realize that equity is not just a buzzword, that you cannot approach the problems. There are very poor communities in rural Michigan that need their own unique solutions. They're very unique situations here in Detroit and Highland Park and Hamtramck and other cities that are urban as well.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is have that kind of ground level conversation about what are the solutions that work in communities, but how can the state be strategic about making sure that everybody is getting what they need?
Yeah. When you think about Detroit and the impact that you need to have here, mm-hmm. Speaking of things like the history here, which of course looks different than it does in some other parts of the state, what are the things what are the indicators you're looking for in Detroit with the work that you're doing? I mean, you're a Detroiter, and of course, I mean, you've got to serve the whole state, but the needs here are always different than they are in other places.
Right. So let me just give a shout out to Nika Goss and the work that they're doing at Detroit Future City. Just like really, first of all, you need an analysis of where are we?
Yeah. They're providing so much great information
about
not just what happened in the past, but what it looks like today.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's the first step. Like you need to understand where we are and understand. So a lot of the problems are not problems that are new mm-hmm. for consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Education in Detroit is not a new issue. You know, there are all kinds of solutions that are being thrown at Detroit students, and some of them have hope. Some of them, we know from history, aren't going to work. You know, how do we look at, and look at it as a continuum of not just K-12, because, you know, the governor's putting a lot of money into making sure that four-year-olds are getting access to education.
Yes.
And then we're putting a lot of money into making sure there's that post-12th grade. You know, I am happy to say that the high school graduation rates are slightly up in the state. We're seeing more kids actually going to college, maybe not as many as we wanted to, but mm-hmm. we are moving in that direction. And I think that's because of the great work that we're doing with programs like Reconnect, which, you know, offered free college for right now, anyone over the age of 21,
mm-hmm.
You know, so a community college, we are trying to make sure community colleges in 4 years are, you know, working more closely so that there's an easier transition. And we're having brave conversations about the value of a college education, because that's another thing that for some reason in the last 20 years, everybody is ashamed to say that there's value in a college education, even their kids go to college.
Right.
The people
right.
who are having the conversations, they went to college, their kids went to college,
yeah.
but everybody else is like, oh, you don't need college. Well, we know not everyone's going to go to college, but we also need to have them on paths where they can feed their families comfortably. And so
absolutely.
Those apprenticeships that I'm talking about, those, you know, high value credentials, certificates, and other things, we've got to get more Detroiters in that path. And then we've got to make sure that we don't end up having a city. You know, you and I just talked about home ownership. That's the number one way people build wealth.
It still is in this country, even though there's all this debate about, you know, this kind of younger generations are not buying houses at the same
rate. They listen to Elon Musk, who says, oh, I don't buy a house. Okay, yeah, Elon Musk is sitting on like $100 billion.
The guy
it's okay if he doesn't buy a house.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Yeah. But it's still the best way, even in the short term nowadays, to build wealth.
Right.
And too many Detroiters, too many Black Detroiters.
So that's why the governor has put so much attention into, first of all, expanding our housing option. Our housing stock is old in this state.
Yeah.
So when you talk about people buying a house, that's amazing. When you live in one of the great historic neighborhoods in the city, but you know, because Detroit property was undervalued for so long, it was actually in the reach. Like some of our best neighborhoods were in the reach of like truly middle class families.
Absolutely.
However, like you got to put a new roof on. Yeah,
take care of those houses.
Yeah, and that's expensive.
Yeah.
You know, particularly when we're talking about making houses greener, you know, making them, you know, using modern materials to make sure that the houses are sustainable. So the governor has been really focused. The governor and MISHTA has done a great job. The first statewide housing plan in the history of our state, going into regions, saying what are the issues that you have. You know, knocking down barriers with things like, zoning and how zoning locks people out of opportunity, payment assistance
When you think about how much you have to do to fix what's kind of broken, it's really
it is so multidimensional. And that's why I'm always, people who have these black and white solutions, scare me because the reasons for poverty and the reasons that we have generational poverty are so multidimensional.
It's all so complex and intertwined.
Absolutely.
With other stuff.
And that's why I think the Poverty Task Force is so important, because we have Michigan Department of Corrections at the table so that justice-involved individuals have access to the workforce. You know, we have the Department of Transportation at the table so that we can leverage technology to make transportation more accessible to people who live in cities like Detroit, where transportation has not been that great,
Do you worry that I always wonder about this when people are working for a particular administration and government. Do you worry that what you're doing could be undone at some point, or are you approaching it from a systemic change level that would put things in place that would make sure that this kind of continues?
Right. I would like to see us have the same level of success that the people who created some of these policy decisions had. I mean, unwinding some of this stuff has been incredibly difficult. And I think that because we have a different political landscape in the state right now for the first time in 40 years, this legislature hit the ground running and tried to undo a lot of the damage. But the system level changes that have to be made are, just by necessity, going to take a little bit longer. But I, every day, am conscious of the fact we got to get it done immediately because we have to show people results so that they see this approach works. You know, we're not just changing for the sake of changing so that in 4 years when we have a different governor, they can come and unwind everything we did. We want to be able to have evidence that this approach works. And I really, you talked about political views on this. I actually am heartened by the fact that some of these ideas, which again, 10 years ago, you couldn't even talk about.
Right.
You're seeing organizations like, SBAM, and other organizations that serve the business community are coming together. Business leaders are coming together and saying, look, we've got to have a different approach. Because it's good for employers too. They want the workforce. We need more workers.
Yep.
So, but we need to have better trained workers. We need to have people whose problems like childcare are solved. We need people. So when we talk about, we talk about the complexity of it, when we talk about getting people more access to childcare, that means we need to have more childcare providers. That means they have to get paid a decent wage.
Right.
You don't want somebody taking care of your kid when they're getting paid the same amount that you would make working at White Castle.
Yeah.
You need to have people who are trained, who will make that childcare experience a win for your family. So it is very complex, but I think that that's what attracted me to the work.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to do it every day.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to make you a promise that you're going to come back sometime and tell us about how these 10 nonprofits that are part of the My Impact Fund, how they're doing and what's changing.
And let me give you a sneak peek, because today is a great day for us to talk about this, because we're going to be announcing another round of grants. We had a $64 million grant fund called the Community Center Grant that the legislature was kind enough, and the governor was kind enough to use, you know, some of the federal dollars. And then the state actually, the legislature actually put another $4 million on top of the 60 that we got from federal dollars to help strengthen community centers that are helping our kids with after school programming and senior citizens with, loneliness is another trauma that people are experiencing. So how do we help seniors? And this was a once in a career, I think, opportunity to give really ground level support to both city and county governments, school districts, libraries, nonprofit organizations to help with those community centers. So we'll be announcing those very soon.
Well, that's excellent.
Watch this space.
All right. Kim Trent, Deputy Director for Prosperity for the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Opportunity. Always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us on Created Equal.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah. So I got a lot of my questions answered that conversation with Kim Trent about how they are fighting poverty differently in the state of Michigan. Mm-hmm. The question will be, of course, what the outcomes are, right? What do they achieve by the time they leave office at the end of 2026?
Yeah, it's notable to say that this is still very new, right? That they're just starting to hit the ground running. But
some of the programs are new. I mean, some of them have been around for a bit now, but the more aggressive ones are for sure just starting to take off. And I told her at the end, you got to come back. Tell us how it works.
Right. Get a follow-up on how this all pans out.
Yeah. Created Equal is a production of WDET, Detroit's Public Radio.